What is up, everybody, and welcome back to the Triple H Podcast Happy Hour Hoops loaded show for you guys today. As you know, we're approaching the Sweet 16, approaching the very end of the NBA season. Tons of drama in both conferences. We got it all today. We're gonna go over everything, all that drama, all the March Madness, Sweet 16 matchups, a couple rants from Steve, a rant or two from myself. Jake's happy his guy Donovan Mitchell will be back as soon as Friday. And you guys know that Happy Hour Hoops is brought to you by WinStreaks. It's simple, guys. You pick teams to win games, accumulate points on those games, and then you win cash prizes weekly. WinStreaks is 100% free to play. You can make up to 5 picks per day on the NBA, NFL when it comes back, NHL, college basketball, college football when it comes back. MLB is right around the corner, so you can also do that. 100 players win cash prizes every week up to $2,000. Contest runs every week from Monday to Sunday. Again, there's no deposits ever. 100% free to play the WinStreaks app. Use our code HHH when you sign up and start winning cash prizes while you pick your favorite teams to win. Go download the WinStreaks app. Fellas, how are we doing today?
We're doing well. I'm going to keep it short because I got a lot to say the rest of the show, but we're doing fantastic right now. Jake, how you doing?
I'm doing well. The Donovan Mitchell, we'll talk about that a little bit. Great news on this Wednesday. Had a great weekend. I watched so much women's and men's college basketball this weekend. I feel like I've just been seeing, having real hoop dreams because that's all that's in my brain right now. So I'm glad that we're here to kind of let go of some of that information. And there's been some, last night was a great, you know, we had all these games Monday night, 5 million people watching Iowa, West Virginia, and what was a great game, except for the refs in Iowa, it was a great game, not for West Virginia as much. And then last night, the NBA was like, oh, it's our turn, and they delivered as well. We're going to talk about that. Lots to get into today, so let's get to it.
Yes, I love it. Let's get right into it. We'll start with the notes. Some injury stuff here, some stuff. Actually, maybe I'm looking at the second bullet point here. We could probably pencil that in somewhere in between Steve's rant.
That'll be talked about later.
Starting with Russell Westbrook, though, he's back after just 3 short weeks after having surgery on a fractured part of his hand. I'm sure the Clippers love to see Westbrook back. Unfortunately, it didn't work out the first game he came back. He looked great, but to no avail for the Clippers. They lost, and even after Tyronn Lue called the Clippers soft. So I don't know if you guys heard Paul George's comments last week, basically saying they don't have an identity with like 15 games to go. You never love to hear that. So yes, I think good thing that Westbrook's back in the lineup, but maybe some trouble in paradise in LA. What do you guys think of the Clippers right now? Just real quick.
Shocking that a James Harden team doesn't have an identity right now. just so shocking. And I'm not really too surprised with the Clippers being called soft, mainly because, you know, James Harden and Paul George have kind of had that tagged on their name for quite some time. Although Paul George, I feel, is a little unfair. I think it's mainly because he kind of sometimes shies away in the big moments. But I wouldn't really call him a soft player when you look at what he's gone through within his career. And then obviously you have Kawhi, who always seems to be hurt. This year's been his best season of health in a while. But if you want to call a team soft, the guy coming back, Westbrook's the opposite of soft. Right. Like, that's the complete opposite there. Clippers, though, you know, I'm just going to be a real shame if they kept losing and, you know, maybe fall out of that fourth spot. It'd be a real shame. But with the Clippers, you guys know how I feel. Nothing's changed this whole year. No matter when they looked great, no matter when they looked bad, if you got James Harden on your team, I do not trust you in the postseason. And nothing's changed there. And not to mention, too, right now, the Clippers would play the New Orleans Pelicans, I believe. The New Orleans Pelicans in the first round. I'll tell you guys right now, I don't want any part of that Pelicans team. Even with the injury to Brandon Ingram, that's a team that can go on runs. That's a team that when they get hot, they get hot. And I know a lot of people, they've kind of been flying under the radar. Nobody is really paying attention to Zion, he is looking like his old self week after week after week now, more and more, to the point where, you know, even, you know, with Brandon Ingram, obviously huge, huge loss, but I said it too. And we love Wake, Pelicans fan, maybe the only Pelicans fan I know. I told him, you know, in the playoffs, you need to have a legitimate number one option. Might almost be a good thing for the Pelicans to sign, could be that guy, because the offense has been running through him. His assists have been way up lately, and he's been dominant. I'll tell you right now, for the Clippers, I would not want any part of New Orleans in the first round.
I feel that, man. And for the Western Conference, the first nine seeds, so excluding the Warriors, 1 through 9, the only team in that group that has a losing record in their last 10 games is the Clippers, 4-6.
Yeah.
All the other teams in the top nine seem to be winning, and they are going the opposite direction.
They've basically been a 500 team since they had that big stretch where people started considering them contenders and were like, oh, are the Clippers for real? Are they a favorite? And we're on this podcast, like, let's tone it down on the Clippers. Like, January, February basketball, much different than March, April. And here we are. And you made a great point about the Pelicans in that matchup. The Pelicans, I don't know what the series price, if there is one available right now, you can look ahead to those. But I would be surprised if the Pelicans aren't like minus 200, minus 250 favorites, minus like heavy favorites in that series. The Pelicans, whoever ends up the one seed, whether it's if it's the Nuggets, it'll be a tougher draw because the Nuggets are just going to be a tough draw for everybody. Yeah. But if it's the Thunder, or if somehow the Timberwolves pull that off, I would be terrified to play the Pelicans in the second round. And we might be looking at a situation where this Pelicans team has a decent road and might be looking at not an easy road, but if they play the Clippers and the Thunder, that might Thunder Pelican series might be like even odds. Like, honestly, because that's how highly I think of this Pelicans team. Last year they were really impressive and then had injuries kind of derail their season. But remember the beginning of last season, they were weren't they like second, third in the West for a good stretch at the beginning of the year before the injuries started to pile up. Feels like they're building on that. We've loved their roster construction. So yeah, the Clippers are in a real danger zone right now with the spot that they're in. And like you said, Steve, they also have James Harden playing in a playoff series with all those long wings that they can throw at him too. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah. So you hope for the Clippers, Westbrook can inject some energy into that group again, and maybe they can start winning with him back in the lineup, but hasn't looked great. Speaking of injuries and the Pelicans, this guy was an ex-Pelican and he's been back in the lab. Lonzo Ball. Finally, some video surfacing of him dunking on a basketball court, doing some actual basketball moves. You know, no concrete reports yet. It's crazy that this is something to get excited about if you're Lonzo Ball, but just the reports before this point have been so grim. But Lonzo expected to at least play some sort of basketball in the NBA next season. So, you know, it's just a good sign. We like to keep tabs on Lonzo Ball. Obviously, you think about the state the Chicago Bulls are in right now, still battling, you know, still a somewhat competitive team. And this is a group it's missing one of their most talented players in Lonzo. So, you know, just good to keep tabs on one of the Ball brothers here. Hopefully he's back, like the report says, next season. So, you know, prayers up for Lonzo. Hopefully he can get back soon. This was interesting to me, Jake. I know you listened to Bill Simmons as well. I don't know if you saw this about Embiid. Basically, he didn't say specifically who, but his sources and you know, people in the medical field close to him said that, you know, Embiid could be ready and good to go as far as the injury that he suffered, and come play in time, this, you know, Embiid could be back and playing for the 76ers. You know, whether you think that's a good idea, if he should try to come back and even try to salvage this season, which would be, you know, just very difficult for them in general. And then even if they make it out of the play-in, whoever they draw in the first round would be crazy hard. You would assume Embiid's at least a little bit out of shape. What do you guys think about Embiid in a play? I mean, the only reason I'm intrigued by it is because a Miami-Philly game with Embiid back in the play-in would be must-watch. But
yeah.
I don't know. I feel like every other week it's conflicting reports.
Bill Simmons' source is probably Daryl Morey. He's had him on the podcast before. They're buddies. So yeah. It's a pretty good source there.
Yeah.
The biggest thing is the conditioning that you mentioned for Embiid. Like, how does he look when he comes back? There's no way he's going to be in as good of shape. We've seen him have trouble coming back from these injuries and being in shape where they've limited his minutes and everything else. And in a do-or-die game with the Heat, not do-or-die if they were 7-8 seed. Obviously, they'd get another chance. But in that kind of situation where you want to win and be the 7th seed and get into the playoffs right away and avoid the Boston Celtics. I don't know. It's a scary proposition to put Joel in that spot with the injury. But if that's been I feel like we've talked about it. That's what we thought the plan was all along. Like as long as you're in that spot, bring Joel either towards the end of the season or for the play-in and let the chips play out from there. He'd be the best player on the floor in that game. In any play-in scenario, whether it's, mm-hmm. that game or if they lose and had to play you know, Chicago or somebody else, but we'll see. I have doubts that his conditioning would be well, and we know how we feel about the Miami Heat, and especially in a one game situation, not sure about that.
Yeah, and more than likely the way it's been trending for Philly, Miami's probably going to be the host of that game, right? They'll probably be the home team for that game, which makes it even tougher. My whole thing, and I said this with Embiid too, there's been a lot of rumors for a while that like, oh, he could be ready by the play-in, could be ready by the play-in. He's got to be ready before that if you want him to play in the play-in. You can't have a guy who's been out as long as Embiid has, no matter how dominant he is, and just expect him to be right back to that MVP-type level against a Miami Heat in a play-in game. You got to hope you can play maybe a couple games at the end of the regular season, at least just get 15, 20 minutes of on-court time before you play there, because that, I just don't think that's a great strategy. And also, too, if he only comes back for the play-in, in my mind, and I think everyone can agree to this, that means he's not 100%. Because if he was 100%, you're playing the few games great before point. That. And with Philly, you got to look at the bigger picture here. Is it worth it bringing back for one game when maybe he's like 80%, 75% against more than likely a Miami Heat team, which is never an easy matchup when you're healthy, and risking a further injury? Because like we said, with this guy, his injuries tend to linger. And with Philly, if they think that, hey, this is something we want to do, we want to try to get, you know, the 7 seed and then play more than likely Milwaukee or Cleveland, I guess. I would say probably Milwaukee at this point, but could go either team and give them a series, and Embiid's going to be ready for that series, that's fine. But if you're just bringing him back as a method of desperation of, we got to win this playing game, and you don't think he's even up to, you know, the conditioning standards, or you don't expect him to play a full time, there's no way in my mind that Embiid only plays in the play-in and you're getting 38 minutes out of him that night. No shot. No shot. So if you can't bring him back a couple games before and get him good to go, what's the point of rushing him back at all?
Yeah.
Great point.
That's a good point. I think he would, you know, even just from his point of view, like I don't think if it came down to that, and that was the perfect scenario where all of a sudden he's ready and wasn't before, but he's ready for the playing game, I don't think, you know, he'd be down to just be like, yeah, just throw me in against Miami.
Right.
And, you know, I have to go up against Bam for 38 minutes or whatever it is. You know, I don't know how cool he would be with that, especially the slim chance that you do make it past the play and then you have to play, you know, Milwaukee, Boston, or New York or Cleveland, whoever you land there. But yeah, it's tough. I think everyone wants to see Joel back. I know on a different Bill Simmons episode, to keep bringing this up, Austin Rivers was on last week, and he said there's no way in hell he would bring Embiid back if he's the Sixers. Right. So, you know, there's a lot of differing opinions. I mean, I get that angle too. You know, you don't want,
I don't know if I get that, because this team was, they were the second best team in the East before Embiid got hurt. Like we were all best, like, okay, really. this is the best.
He was the overwhelming MVP favorite. They were the second best team in the East. There were people that were saying, is this the year Philly can like get over that hump and make a run? Like there were legitimate conversations about that, because Maxey was kind of surging right at the same time too. Embiid was so dominant. I mean, we're talking like he was 35 and it felt like 15 a night. No one could guard him. I mean, I just, you know, and it's tough, right? Because, you know, with Philly fans, you're just tired of waiting. You just want to get over the hump more than anything. But I think, you know, sometimes you got to look at the bigger picture, long-term solution. A, in my mind, I don't want to risk, you know, bringing back arguably one of the best players in the NBA, if not the best player when he was healthy. and risking, you know, furthering and in like making an injury worse or setting back whatever it is before the off season. And B, you got to be kind of realistic here. You are, if you win the play-in, you're the seventh seed. You're playing Milwaukee in a road series where Milwaukee has four home games. Boston is the overwhelming favorite in the East right now, right? You lose that play, you're the eighth seed. You're playing them in a series where they have the home court advantage. It just, if Embiid's 100%, then absolutely. But the way everything's been coming out and the way people are saying that, oh, he might play in the play-in makes me think he's not, and they're just going to rush it back because, you know, it's a one game, you know, do or die pretty much situation. I don't think that's smart this year for the 76ers. I really don't.
A great point. We got some Instagram comments. Meme Skis says hi about four times. So hi, meme skis 29. Ermagard, that's how I know that's how you would say that there. Excited for the Sweet 16. Go UConn. Yeah. Zach Serve, Dunny's hat is sick. Go Tar Heels. A little shout out for Dunny and a little shout out to Steve from Logan Tribal. Is Steve single? I'll let Steve answer that.
Oh wow. I'm married to the game. You already know that.
Ball is life. That's what Steve says.
Love it, man.
Instagram followers, keep commenting along throughout the show. But Dunny, take it away, sir. What else we got here?
Well, we got your guy coming back as soon as Friday was the report today. Yeah. Donovan Mitchell had that nasal issue, got it taken care of, and speak of Philly, he could be back as soon as Friday to play Philly.
That's right.
And I think even more importantly, we saw the Bucks lose a thriller last night, which we're going to talk about, but that puts the Cleveland Cavaliers just two spots back from the two seed in the East, the Knicks 2.5 spots back. Cavs realistically can grab this two seed. What do you think about Don coming back real quick and, you know, the possibility of getting that two seed? Or do you want the two seed? Which matchup would you prefer?
I'm very excited for Mass Don, and I just want to avoid the four seed at this point and having to play Orlando or the Knicks. So whether it's the three or the two, not as concerned. I don't want to say I like the matchup better with the Pacers than the Heat or the Sixers, because the Pacers are a scary team too. But I want the Pacers out of this matchup.
But I do.
If it's possible, yeah.
I love the Pacers. You know we love the Pacers.
Exactly. And I just don't want to disrespect them.
Inexperienced.
Exactly. And the Cavs, it's a good matchup for the Cavs to grind them out. Like, slow that game down. And if it's playing at the Cavs' pace all that series, it should be an easier series. If the Cavs are in a series with the Heat, like, that's – the Heat – and the Cavs play exactly the same kind of styles, and I'm very terrified of the Heat in that kind of series, as everybody should be. And if it's the Sixers with Embiid and he comes back and is healthy and they win a play-in game, that's terrifying too. Like, that's the worst case scenario. So I do want them to get the two, just because it'd be, why not get the two seed? And if they do win that first round, would much rather have a home court against the Bucks if that was a second round series. But avoiding the Knicks or the Magic is the key, and I'm glad to see Don back. We're gonna see Mass Don, I'm sure, so that'll be fun to see. But the real issue is his knee with the tendonitis. We know that's gonna linger throughout the year, so hopefully it just holds off enough at this point where he can be effective throughout the playoff run, because he's not going to be able to get fully healthy until the summer anyways. So he just needs – and they have missed him dearly. Like Garland – there's a Darius Garland conversation happening among Cavs fans. I don't subscribe to it. I think he's been dealt a pretty bad hand the last couple of years with trying to kind of let Donovan fit in and take over the team. All the injuries that he's had, especially this year, like this is a – that people do not give enough credit. Cavs fans specifically don't give enough credit to how debilitating of an injury that is. To break your jaw and not be able to eat food for months. And they went overseas, like all this other stuff. And then when he comes back, Don gets hurt. And it's like, okay, Darius, you don't have to just come back and play. You have to actually carry the offensive load for this team while you're working yourself back into shape. It's been a tough draw. He's gotten a lot of criticism. But he's also shot the ball, I think it was at least 2 weeks ago, was like shooting the best three-point percentage since the All-Star break. I'm sure it's still pretty high there. So he's been shooting the ball better. He's been trying to be more aggressive and get his shot. And that's what you want to see too. So if he and Don can both get hot at the right point, that's what's going to make the Cavs the most dangerous. But it's good to see Don back.
Love it, man. Yeah, this Friday night should be fun, seeing him up against Philly. Hopefully, you know, all goes well.
Not surprised they didn't bring him back, rush him back for tonight's huge matchup in Charlotte. I'm not shocked by that at all.
No, I think I could sit that one out.
He might have wanted to, though. Maybe pad the stats a little bit for the first night back. But yes, I think some smart decision making did go into that one. Jake, I'm happy you added this. I kept meaning to. I forgot. Last piece of news here. Big piece of news. Oh, that was you, Steve? Mm-hmm. Yes.
We got to talk about this.
We do. MLB has their own gambling scandal. Jonte Porter said, hold my beer, NBA or MLB, because he has his own gambling scandal. It's crazy because a lot of NBA fans probably don't know who Jonte Porter is. Mm-hmm. He previously played for the Grizzlies, currently plays for the Raptors, correct?
Yes.
And he's under investigation because of irregularities on his unders that were being placed in specific games.
Not the smartest guy in the world. I'll tell you that right now. Kind of suspicious. Where I believe one was an $80,000 bet where he had his all four unders parlayed or something together, and he played 2 minutes in that game. Left with, I think they called it an illness. Yep. Apparently there was something on. There was a second game where he did something similarly. I don't think it was $80,000. I think it was $15,000 bet or something. But regardless, people can think they're slick, but when the most money on Jonte Porter unders comes in one day, it raises a couple red flags. And obviously, Jonte Porter, not a household name, not really.
Did you guys know this was Michael Porter Jr.'s brother, by the way? I did not know that.
I actually did not know that.
I didn't know that until this scandal.
No, I had no idea about that. But he's not a household name. He's not too much of an impactful player. The Raptors season has not been great this year, to put it in light terms. But this is kind of a little scary. Of, we see the NBA and the direction they're going with betting, where next year, I don't know if you guys saw the announcement, but League Pass, they're going to allow you to bet right then and there on the League Pass. Mm-hmm. You'll be able to live bet in the apps or whatnot. We've seen obviously how, obviously LeBron with DraftKings, but we see it getting more and more integrated with the actual sport and actual sports betting. Obviously, Major League Baseball, which we're not going to talk about here, but they're having their own issues with everything that's going on with Ohtani, whether or not to believe him. Regardless, who cares about that? And then today in the news that just came out is, I don't know if it got passed or it's being proposed, that the NCAA is going to ban player props because it's affecting how the game is. They don't like it. So I guess it's more of a question to you guys, or what do you think the solution is? Because we look at, more and more of these scandals starting to pop up. And obviously that just ties into sports betting becoming more and more popular each and every day, more obviously it's becoming legal in almost every single state. Now everyone is, hopping on. I don't know if it's good for professional sports. Obviously, you have to have some rules in place. Athletes shouldn't be betting, obviously, especially not betting on themselves. But my thing is, obviously, Jonte Porter, not a big name, but is this a concern going forward of maybe some bigger stars? Because I don't really think it would be a money situation at that point, right? They're just degenerates like us. They're like, oh, game's good. I want to throw money on it. I don't think it's really a money situation with a lot of them, maybe some of the smaller, guys. But to me, this is a big red flag that, maybe this is the first one that was caught, right? We don't really know what's been going on. We don't really know. Some guys probably a lot better at hiding it than others. But this has got to be big news, because if the NBA is trying to push the direction, and they clearly are, pushing the direction of being more and more integrated with sports betting and having that just kind of be part of the league, the game, whatever – They gotta be careful with that, because the last thing I want is the integrity of the game, being ruined by sports betting. Because me, I've been sports betting for years. I love it. It's fun to have an edge, to have a rooting interest. However, at the same time, too, this would crush me if it came out that there were multiple teams or multiple players actively tanking stats or actively trying to do something. We've seen people get blamed for stat padding all the time, I get it. They have their incentives. Maybe, if they get a certain amount in a game, we've seen that before, right? Last week of the NFL regular season, guys are always trying to hyper target guys that need a certain amount of receptions to hit their bonus incentive. But I think it goes in a really bad direction if athletes are starting to become more and more like involved with sports betting. I don't think it's a good direction to go. And I love sports much as the next guy. This is a big red flag for me that a guy like Jonte Porter can do this. Like,
well, the fact that it was like the biggest bet awarded both the nights. That's the scariest thing about it is that it, like, whether it was just him, whether it was people that he was there's, I know that I saw on Twitter that he has a Discord where he talks a lot about like stocks and stuff, and then and talked about like college parlays and everything like that. So wasn't a bunch of people in that Discord that threw a ton of money on it too, like a different private Discord. You ask what the solution is, Steve. I don't, not to to disallow betting in the United States. I think the rabbit's out of the hat now, and this is the repercussions that we've talked about that the world was not, and the sports world was not ready to deal with. And instead of, you know, soft launching it, they hard launched everything. And now every single broadcast, you can't watch a single game without a broadcast.
We got about it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, we got Reese Davis.
They have the FanDuel line of the night when you see, right? You'll see this is what it started. This is the live line.
Every podcast you listen to has a parlay that they're handing out. Reese Davis is calling that's risk-free investments on ESPN. I saw that too this week. Like, this crazy, like the talk, the verbiage around it and everything else. So I don't know. It's interesting with the NCAA getting rid of the props. As someone who bet a lot of touchdown props in college football this year, like, they were really popular, and that's one thing to disincentivize those players. There's no way you can get rid of props for professional sports. No. Like, with the market and how much goes into that, how many times you see, if you're scrolling the timeline every night, like someone who has a 10 leg parlay with Jason Tatum plus three threes and plus 25 points and all these other things. Go ahead, Donnie.
Did you guys see what Tatum said today, by the way, about people's parlays? This isn't really one way or another about specifically what we're talking about like it hurting the game. But he was asked if he, about people's parlays and like if he, you know, if he's aware of people, you know, placing him in their parlays and all that stuff. And he said, I guess I do feel bad when I don't hit people's parlays. I don't want to lose I don't want to lose them money. So Jason Tatum, just a man of the people. He says he's heard it all before. He's heard people say, you know, I need one more rebound from you or one more three. Not that he specifically, you know, tries to do that for them, but he said he does feel bad if he loses you guys money. So it's crazy. Just like even that, like they're aware and they're hyper aware because people are screaming it at them.
How can they not be aware? Right. At this point, it's thrown in their face 24/7. I mean, Donnie, you talked about it. You hear people in the arena yelling at them.
Maybe I can do an early old man take of the week right here. I went to not the most recent Celtics game I went to, but I went to a Celtics game earlier in the winter, and I was sitting fairly close, probably the best seats I've ever had at the Garden, honestly. And a guy, I was at the end of the aisle, the guy at the beginning of the next aisle was just nonstop from the first quarter to the fourth quarter. I couldn't tell if he was a Celtics or a Lakers fan, just screaming about his parlay. And it's just like, it just, you know, everyone likes to gamble. Everyone likes to, you know, if you're into that, fine. I'm not saying it's ruining the game entirely, but it can ruin an experience. And it was annoying, bro. Like I was glaring at him the whole game. It's like, you just enjoy a little bit of it. Yeah. We all have our parlays. We all have our side bets, you know. It's great. It's fun. You know, you like to get hyped if your bet hits, fine. But, you know, it definitely takes away some of the joy and just authenticity of the game of basketball. So, and I'm with you, Jake. Like, I don't know. What is the way to fix this? Yeah. I think you're right. I think they got into this.
Well, one way I think is you suspend these guys like for 2 years or something like that. Like if Jonte Porter might never play in the NBA again if he's found guilty of that. And like those are the penalties. And we saw the NFL,
and that might have happened without the betting.
Exactly. Yeah. But the NFL got very serious with their punishments. I think it's a year if you get caught right away, and then it's 2 years.
Calvin Ridley was a year, right?
Yeah.
And he didn't even bet on himself. It was just random games he was involved. I think personally, if you bet on yourself, you should be out of the league.
Yeah.
Because you're in control of impacting the game at that point. I don't care if it's overs or unders, right? You're betting on yourself. You're completely like – everything changes in your head, right? Like, Dunny, if I was like, all right, like, Dunny's playing a pickup basketball game, and Dunny's like, you know what? I like my over 8.5 rebounds. Dunny's crashing the glass every single possession. He's not thinking about anything else. So it changes how the game's played too. I think, you know, the players, I get you don't want them to bet at all. You don't want them to bet on sports. But I think if you really want to put the, like, hammer down on something, like, if you bet on yourself and your call, you're out. You're out of the league.
Yeah.
Don't care who it is.
It needs to be severe.
Because that's what changes it. The Calvin Ridley, I understood he was out for a year. I'm like, well, he's not playing. He's not impacting it. I get it because it's a slippery slope. And this is the slippery slope we're going towards with Jontay Porter, where you're betting on yourself. And first off, too, like, Jontay Porter, you're a pussy, bro. Yeah. You're betting under. You're betting your own unders, and then faking injuries.
Yeah, he left the game with like an eye issue,
illness. Like, come on, dude. If you're gonna bet on yourself, at least bet the overs and try. But that's the whole thing.
Want the cash, bro. Like, well, that's what you said earlier.
That's the easy money cash. But that's what ruins the integrity of the game. And I really do think you have to make a statement here. And it's like, if you bet on yourself, you're actively like influencing the game one way or another, right? Doesn't matter what you bet on yourself with. Yeah. You got to be gone. That completely ruins everything. And at the end of the day, then what's the point of playing these competitive sports if the players aren't even like trying to win and they're just trying to hit their parlays? Yep. I think it had to be brought up. I know Jontay Porter's not a big name, but this to me is like the biggest red flag. This would ruin sports if more and more athletes came out that they were betting on themselves.
Let me ask you guys this. I would be crushed because I love player props in the NBA regular season, playoffs, whatever. Do you guys think the NBA would ever go for this, eliminating player props like college, but just for the regular season? And then when playoff, because you wouldn't anticipate anyone trying to pull this shit in a playoff game.
You would hope not, right?
Right.
You would hope not.
You know, you can never be sure, but obviously, you know, regular season, there's 82 games. There's guys like Jontay Porter getting minutes in the regular season. Like, the Raptors wouldn't be in the playoffs. This guy wouldn't get time if they were in the playoffs. I don't know. I think, you know, that's just a solution I came up with just since we've been talking about this. I don't know if the league would even go for that, but I think that's, you know, maybe a thought that they think about it. And, like, I think you guys are saying all the right things too. Like, there has to be severe discipline for these guys. If it, like, I wouldn't be surprised if Jontay Porter is not on the Raptors the next time we have this podcast.
Yeah, I think he's still away from the team right now, right? And it's I think it's one of those situations. I don't think he'll ever be back in the league because the whole Calvin Ridley thing in the NFL was different. He was hurt. He was just betting on games he was watching. And to that, like, I don't want to say it wasn't harsh enough because, like I said, I think the reason it was a year is because of a slippery slope like something like this. Like, I'm all for, like, if an athlete wants to bet money on a game, they're just like us, right? If they're not involved in the game, if it's not their sport, then I don't care. I know, you know, that's – the leagues are a lot more strict on that than I think I would be. But in my opinion, I mean – betting on yourself, you got to be out of the league. That ruins everything. And that will ruin professional sports. And that's what I'm nervous of, because these sports are pushing. Every betting has just been pushed for years. And now it's like, you're pushing it to the point where we might have pushed it too far.
Where
everything's changing how games are being played and stuff. And I really hope that's not going to be the case. And to your point on player props, Dunny, like, I think that would be like last case scenario of what like these sports books and what the leagues would do, because they make millions.
Too much. I don't think it's realistic, but it's just what do you do?
From our Instagram, CT Freer, do football players bet on things like the Kentucky Derby? We see them at the Derby all the time. Is that not allowed? I don't know. See,
That's where it's like a gray area, because I'm sure they're betting on it. I don't think they're just going to the Kentucky Derby to watch. Obviously, you know, that's a big event. If you just want to act like, you know, you're someone important, you go anyways. But come on, guys. Like, let's be real. Like, these guys are – they're around the same age as us, right? We're talking about young athletes. they're playing sports. Of course, they're probably going to be
who have 100x time the money is.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Well, like you got like at the end of the day, you can't look at them as athletes too. You got to look at them as just like regular people. Like, yeah. Like of course they're going to want to bet. They see it all the time. It's thrown in their face 24/7. That's what I was saying with you, Donnie, too. They know their lines before the game start. Are you kidding me?
Oh, yeah.
Are you telling me Tatum doesn't know? Oh, it's posted everywhere. Oh, it's 26.5 tonight or it's 28.5. That's why I'm like, maybe you give them a little bit and say, hey, you can bet on these other sports. You can't directly influence. But if we ever catch you betting on our sport, you're gone. Because yeah. Then I think you at least – because I think what the problem is if the rules are so strict – then it's just going to – guys are going to just become – make stupid decisions. Yeah. And it's going to be really bad for the sport. And if the rules are too loose, then obviously you have situations where it just ruins the integrity of the game. So I think maybe be like, hey, you can bet on these other events that you aren't directly, like, affecting. But if we catch you betting on your sport, even if it's a game you're not involved, I don't think they should be able to bet. I don't think any NBA player should be able to bet on the NBA.
Yeah, I'm with it.
I like it. I'm here with it. But my last thing I want to say is it sucks. And I think this just goes to what Jake said about them getting into it so fast. Like there was no soft launch. No. They went fucking full steam ahead. And it's crazy because like a guy like JJ Redick, who I love and I don't blame, but like all he's been talking about lately is how he wants to talk about the, like, you know, keep the game pure. And like, he wants to talk about actual basketball. He doesn't want it to be debatey on his podcast. He doesn't want to talk about the fake shit. He wants to talk about the real sport. But then his face is all over DraftKings too. And this is something that could absolutely ruin not only the NBA, but other sports.
Yeah.
And it's tough because I know I might sound like a hypocrite. I love sports gambling. I love both sides of it, but there needs to be, you know, there needs to be a solution. And obviously, you know, we're not the guys who come up with that. So Adam Silver and other, you know, other heads of leagues are going to have to sit down and figure it out. But, you know, hopefully,
One more thing. You know, if we want a solution for the athletes, if you don't want to bet on your props, check out this Win Streaks app. You just pick who's going to win the game. It's free to play. Right? It's free to play. You're not betting here. You just pick who's going to win. You get a certain amount of points. Try that. If you're really like, you know what, Chante, download the Win Streaks app and just pick the Toronto Raptors. There you go.
Yeah. I like it.
There you go. Love that. Great plug, Steve. And just a good idea for Jonte Porter if he even stays in the league. We'll see. Monday night, Celtics gave up a 30-point lead. Let's just get right into it, guys. We'll make this quick. I feel like I would probably get clowned if I didn't talk about this, and it's just something I want to talk about anyway. Horrible, can't happen. I'm going to talk about the bad first, and then I'll talk about why I still feel good about my C's. Tatum and Brown's late game offense was probably the worst I've seen all year from both of them. I think there was a Celtics possession where Jaylen Brown literally dribbled on the wing for 23 seconds and then hoisted up just a gross contested shot. Tatum had some real bad turnovers in the fourth quarter. Just no action really in general. Once they had already let the Hawks back into the game, I'm talking about, you know, whatever you want to talk about, them letting them back into the game in general. They had 70 points at the half and then only scored 44 for the rest of the game. 44 in the first quarter, only scored 44 for the rest of the game in the second half. Like it was a, you know, the cliche sports term. It was a tale of two halves for the Celtics. They let Trey Youngless Hawks team climb back into this. Another bad Porzingis and Horford were just getting out hustled, bodied, outpowered by Fernando and Capella, guys who are just not on their level. I'm sorry. You know, Capella's a fine player, but Fernando's a guy who stopped by the Celtics for a cup of coffee. I watched him closely for a little bit. He is not a guy who should even be able to sniff Horford or Porzingis. Both of them played soft. I mean, this is bad, but you know, guys have off nights. Sam Hauser had some of the most open looks he's going to have all season. He shot 2 of 9, a guy who is on one of the best heaters in the NBA as far as shooting the ball goes. That sucked. And then Tatum, in the midst of it all, getting an 8-second violation in the second half while the Hawks had already come back. Like that, I couldn't do it, dude. I screamed. That shouldn't
happen ever in any basketball game.
Anyone.
No.
let alone one of the better players in the world, the best player on the best team in the league this year. It was just they just didn't have it. And I'll give Tatum credit where credit's due. He basically, you know, he said all you could say in the post-game presser. He said, we fucked that one up. Like, we blew it. And that's exactly what they did. The good here, or the good that I'm choosing to take from this, they've only lost three times in the last 2 months. And one of those was the Dean Wade Cavs game where he just went absolutely nuclear. They lost that game by 1 point. They lost to the defending champs by six. And then this game, Atlanta, they lost by two, and they were up 30. My big thing is I don't think this translates to playoff basketball. I don't think you'll ever see them play that lax in a playoff game. I think if they're ever up 30 on anyone in the playoffs, there's no way they'll take their foot off the gas like that in a playoff game. I'm not saying a team can't make it close if they go up by that much, but I don't think there's any way that that blow or that, you know, collapse of a game happens in the playoffs. And I also don't think the guys who made the comeback, you know, Dean Wade, maybe, and for the Cavs, he might be in your guys' playoff rotation. But, like, I was thinking about it today. If they meet the Cavs in the playoffs and that game happens in the playoffs, I don't even think Dean Wade is in the rotation at that point in the game. I don't think the guys who are hitting these disgusting threes against the Celtics and Fernando is going to be in a playoff minutes if that was a playoff game. So it's just one of those, you know, it's a really bad all eyes on the Celtics because they're so hot right now and you blow a 30-point game. Like, it's the biggest collapse in Celtics history. It's all these things that are negative. But at the end of the day, this is a team that has lost three times in the last 2 months. So I don't want to overreact.
And I don't think you should, Dunny. I mean, I think the biggest thing you also didn't bring up too in this is they've clinched the conference. Like, the Celtics could lose their next 10 games.
They clinched clinched the one seed before anyone else even clinched the playoffs.
In either sanity. And I think that's the biggest thing there too, right? I think in the Celtics mindset, and the only thing that's a little concerning, Dunny, and I think you could speak on this point, is the only thing that's a little concerning is the lead they blew almost gave me a little bit of flashbacks to some of the playoff games last year where they were up big early and it just, they got complacent and just kind of let it team got hot shooting against them, got right back in the game. And then they didn't really know how to turn it back to that, you know, level they had before it at the start of the game. So with the Celtics, I'm not too concerned though. That's the only, I guess, maybe slight concern. And I would say maybe like 2% concerned. Because of that, because I'm like, oh, we kind of saw this a little bit in the playoffs last year where Celtics got up big and teams just kind of let teams back in. But I think they just kind of checked out that game. They were up, like you said, they're up 30. You clinched the conference. You're the best team in the NBA. And it's just, sometimes it's hard to get right back into that mindset. And it's weird because you're in a weird spot. There's still 10 games left, right? There's still a lot of games. You don't want to rest your starters or the guys for the playoffs all 10 games. You don't want them to come in rusty, right? Because I do believe there is such thing as too much rest and can hurt you. You do want them to play. But, Dunny, I can promise you, Tatum's mindset, Brown's mindset, Porzingis, anyone who's going to be a, you know, impact player in that rotation for the playoffs – they don't have the mindset of I'm going 110% in these final regular season games. It doesn't matter right now for them. They are the one seed no matter what happens. And I think, you know, that's almost a good thing that the Celtics' sights are on something bigger than maybe 65 wins in the regular season or, you know, beating everybody up in the final 3-4 weeks of the season. They're like, this is a team that should win a championship. Like you said, Dunny, they clinched the conference before anyone else clinched a playoff spot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This team has bigger goals than a concern of, we blew a 30-point lead to the Hawks. Is that good? No, it's not a good sign. But like you said, they have three losses in the last 2 months. This is a team that, when healthy, is by far the best team in basketball right now. And they just have – there's a bigger goal this year. There's a bigger goal. This is a team that, you know, it's tough. It's tough to be in that mindset for these, you know, last 10, 12 games because there's really no incentive right now. And I think this is not something to be concerned about. If we saw this in, you know, game one of the Eastern playoffs where they're playing an 8 seed, then, yeah, big red flag. But right now, I don't think there's a concern. We've seen way more good than we have bad of the Celtics team. And like I said, it's tough to really get into that. I got to go 110% mode when it's like, well, we're the one seed regardless of what happens in these games.
I know. It was almost like they went up 30 too quickly in that game.
Exactly. Like, exactly. And they're like, and, all right, we won. We checked out.
Yeah. And
he's like, got street clothes on. You're like, wait, I got to change again, coach?
Yeah. If you're up 30, you should never lose a game right. in the NBA, in my opinion. But I do think it goes back to what I've been saying all year about the All-Star snubs, about the MVP conversation. The league is just that good now where it is possible. It's not, you know, for a while, a 20-point comeback wasn't possible, or it was like the craziest thing ever when we saw it happen. You know, it does it happen all the time? No. Have I even seen it one other time this year? No, but pretty soon, 30 points, maybe that will just be, you know, not the normal, but something that happens every once in a blue moon. Last couple things, D. White and Drew Holiday obviously weren't there. Trae Young wasn't there either, so I don't think you can say that as an excuse. But when your two best defensive players are on the bench that, you know, can let a team come back in a game like that. And then this is kind of just something I've noticed, and I think Celtics fans will hate that I'm even saying this, because Porzingis, the Celtics Porzingis marriage and experience has been nothing but sunshine and rainbows.
Yeah.
But sometimes I think Porzingis is having a little too much fun out there. I think he's a little too comfortable sometimes. I think that Hawks team, like I was saying about Fernando and Capella, especially if one of those guys wasn't in the game, I love how much of a three-point weapon Porzingis is, but he's one of the best post players in the league. He shoots the best post percentage. And like, I need him down there asserting himself sometimes a little more, especially when there's adversity. I don't want to see him chucking 30 footers. And it's not just the shooting that Bucks game that they barely scraped by and won the other day. I think he ended that game with 3 rebounds. And the third rebound was this huge offensive rebound that he put back dunk. But I think there is some games where I'm like, all right, Porzingis, you know, it is great that you're the third fiddle and you don't have to do too much because the Jays carry and White and Holiday carry defensively. But sometimes I do want to see that just a little bit more of a spark or energy from Porzingis. And I think that was something that was glaring in the Hawks game. It's fantastic almost all the time, but I think that is something to keep an eye on. Worried? No. Crazy, stupid fucking loss? Yes. Hopefully it doesn't happen again.
Yeah. CT Freer says, are the Celtics going to do it this year, or are they going to pull a Bruins move? I don't think they're pulling a Bruins. I think
definitely not a Bruins.
No, they fucking
lose. No Bruins.
If they're losing the first round, this podcast is not over.
Now, mind you.
If
you get the Miami Heat, you're not going to be as confident saying that.
Fair enough.
True. But
I think anything less than a finals appearance is a disappointment.
Oh, 100%.
If they don't go to the NBA finals, it's a disappointment.
Especially my dad's already saying if they don't win it, it's disappointment.
I honestly don't hate that. I really don't. The only thing is I think the Nuggets are a brutal matchup if it is Celtics-Nuggets.
Yeah,
I think the Nuggets is the one matchup you don't want to see.
I think it's that unless it's the defending champs, because there's still people who have been saying all season long that they're not better than Denver. So, I mean, fine. If they lose to Denver, then it can't be too much of a clowning. But I do think it's championship or bust in most aspects for the Seas this year. Hilariously enough, the most shit that the Celtics were getting from fans was from Bucks fans on Twitter after the 30-point loss.
No surprise.
The Bucks fans blew a lead of their own, 19-point lead with, I think, 7:56 left, just around 8 minutes left in that game last night to the LeBron-less Lakers. It was one of the better games of the year, I'll say that. Yeah. We have a few Tuesday night games we're going to talk about, but Bucks Lakers. Steve, I know you said you didn't catch most of it. We were doing our MLB draft, but Anthony Davis, I think, is the big thing here. Played, I think, 52 minutes, most minutes by a Laker since Kobe. And on top of that, he just fucking went off, man. 30 plus points, 20 plus rebounds, 4 blocks. Like he was doing everything. And you know, getting the best of Giannis at times too. Jake, did you catch any of that game? Were you locked in there?
Yeah, and that was the main point I took away, is that AD can still get to these heights where he is, he reminds you who he is. The problem with AD is that he doesn't consistently do it, but he can still reach that top level where he can carry this Lakers team on nights and going into the playoffs. That's why I was talking about earlier. Like, it's terrifying for one of these top West teams if they have to deal with the Lakers in the first round. You got LeBron and AD staring at you. And the fact that Russell is playing better than he did last year going into the playoffs.
Reeves
the triple double last night. Anthony Reeves as Reggie Miller, just too stuck in his his college basketball brain. But Austin Reeves with a great game last night. It's a scary thing, but my biggest takeaway was not as much the Lakers, but the Doc Rivers led Bucks. And then I saw a post, Dunny, I'm sorry this is going to make you upset, but I saw a post which was Phil Jackson during the NBA Finals, Lakers Celtics, and they're going into the fourth quarter. They got him mic'd up, and he says, "This team has blown the most fourth quarter leads in the season all year. Just stay with it." And Doc Rivers, obviously the coach of that team, we've talked about that with Doc. That was our biggest thing with Doc when he signed on. Yeah. It's like, this, what he does is chokes in the playoffs and in these big games. And this is a game the Bucks needed to have. This game, like, the Bucks are battling with the Cavs, with the Knicks, with the Magic for that 2 seed. They're not in the clear of any of those teams yet. They're only 2 games ahead of the Cavs, 2.5 ahead of the Knicks, and the Knicks are going to be fully operational starting on Friday. At least maybe Mitchell Robinson plays in the next couple of games. He's upgraded to questionable. Julius Randle comes back eventually. Like, the Bucks needed this game to stay in that 2 seed and stay ahead of everything, and they didn't have it. And that's the biggest thing that shows for me, is like, Doc Rivers rearing its head again. Can the Bucks overcome that? And it's another bad game from Dame with Giannis. Dame was 9 for 29 last night.
Bad, bro.
9 for 29, bro.
Yeah, he had some timely shots, but down the stretch, but
he did have that big three, obviously, that put them in the lead there. But
is Dame time still a thing? Jake, I know you were on this early in the season. You said Dame had lost a step. It's weird sometimes. It's almost like they don't run enough Giannis and Dame actions together. I feel like it's either just one of the two. And Giannis shots down the stretch were questionable as well. I mean, he took a turnaround fadeaway in the lane with AD on him. It's just like, obviously you want the ball in Giannis or Dame's hands down the stretch, but a turnaway jump shot for Giannis, I think even if there's no defender there, I don't love that shot down the stretch in an overtime game.
Nope. No, I don't either. But I I've been saying this for months. I think Giannis has to be the one. He's got to be the alpha. There's too many times where Giannis wants to be like, all right, it's going to be Dame. It's going to be Dame's team. And I just don't think Dame's at that level anymore. We talk about Anthony Davis being, you know, a little inconsistent, but seeing those moments, that's kind of Dame to an extreme level this year. And Dunny, I don't know if you guys have changed it, because I know Dame has been such a clutch shooter, but in my opinion, at the end of a close game, I'd rather have Giannis operating the offense than having him take the shots. I really would.
Well, I want to see more action with the two of them. I feel like you don't like give us some more Giannis and Dame pick and rolls. I don't think it happens enough. I think too many possessions for them last night. They were fine with a Connington three or a Portis three, which Portis has been shooting the shit out of the ball. I'm not saying that, you know, take away shots from him, but like Malik Beasley was, you know, they were just there and he was hitting his shots, and he has been all year, but I don't know. There's down the stretch offense, it just seems like they weren't really sure what to do.
It's weird. It's weird to see. It's weird to see with this team. Like, you would have thought it would have been a seamless fit to have those two together, and it has not been anything of the sort this whole year. And go back to the Lakers side, something that we were going to touch on. I'll just bring it in right now. The Lakers getting a huge win in that play-in
race. They needed that as much as anything else.
They're obviously in this play-in race, but they're looking like they're in a good spot. And would you have ever thought, guys, that we'd be sitting here talking about it on March 27th, where the Golden State Warriors are only one game ahead of the Phoenix Rockets. the Houston Rockets right now. Draymond said they're not worried about the Rockets. Then he got mad in Instagram quotes and said, or Instagram comments is like, of course you use this out of context. What did you listen to that thing? Like, it wasn't out of context. He said they weren't worried about the Rockets. There was nothing that the Rockets are only one game behind, have been playing. They think they're like 21-8 or 21-9 in the last 30. They've been on a run. And Ime Udoka is getting his team going. Yes. April 4th, next Thursday night.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you. I'm shocked they're playing this well without Sengun.
Yeah.
I'm shocked they're playing this well. Now, their young guys have really stepped lately. Amen Thompson has actually picked it up big time. Cam Whitmore, Jalen Green.
27 points on Monday for Jalen.
Yeah,
I feel like literally really since, I don't know if you guys even remember this, a couple weeks ago I said when Sengun was really ascending, I was like, is this guy the best player on the Rockets? And we all were like, undoubtedly, yes. Since that point, obviously he got hurt, but Jalen Green has been
– He had 41 on Saturday night.
Fantastic.
Jalen Green might listen to Happy Hour Hoops because he's been fucking going nuts ever since we said that.
They've been playing unbelievable. I can't believe the run they're on. And honestly, like, it doesn't feel real that they're only a game back right now. Who would you guys like if you're the Lakers, or I guess we'll say the Lakers for the Lakers case, 9-10 matchup. Who would you rather play? Would you rather play Steph, or would you rather play a red hot Rockets team?
I think you'd probably still choose the Rockets.
You think so?
I think so, but.
Just Steph in any winner go home or playoff like situation. I think you take the group, but
the way the Rockets like been one of the best teams in the world. They were 9 straight wins. They're in Oklahoma City tonight. That's gonna be a fun matchup to see. Like, that's a real test to see where they're at. Like they've had some big wins over this stretch, but this is a huge game on the road. I don't know, man. It's a toss. I think it's a little bit of a toss-up, but probably the Warriors. Just the Steph factor is terrifying. But I can't believe we're here with the Warriors this season. I really can't.
No, I'm shocked the Rockets are making it this close. We talked about it, a couple weeks ago? I think the week before the March Madness show that it was wrapped up. That we were like, we know what the play-in teams are going to be. Or not the play-in teams. We know what the playoff teams are going to be. It's just a matter of where they're going to be seated. And then the Rockets said, we have other ideas. And we still got one spot up for grabs right now. And, man, they're making it interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really love this drama down the stretch, especially since Draymond. I mean, dude, fucking Draymond's got to stop tackling people on the court, and he's got to stop fucking with the corny shit on his podcast, dude. I'm sorry. You know what? I meant to preface
just
that.
Just think about when he retires. It's only going to – gonna get 10 times worse.
And that's honestly, dude, fucking say whatever you want when you retire, but the night in and night out of like having to listen to him cry and then say that he's not crying on his podcast and then fucking taking down people by their neck on the court like every other game, it's like, I don't know, I'm a little sick of Draymond. And I love the drama here. I hope the Rockets and Ime can make something happen here, and Jalen Green's been playing fucking phenomenal, and it's super fun to watch. And Houston fans have got to be jacked up, bro. This is the best team they've had since 2018 by far. But Steve, someone else played last night.
It was another TNT game.
Tuesday night was a great night of hoops. And you know, speaking of drama and the seeding, the Mavs are doing their thing, man. Bro. They're a game back from the 5 seed. We talked about how good the Pelicans have been playing. But it's very possible that the Pelicans pass the Clippers and then the Mavs pass the Clippers and get that 5 spot.
Yeah, so, it's going to be interesting. Big win last night for the Mavs. I know a lot of people probably went to sleep. You know, it's the late night 10 p.m. tip start. They beat the Kings by 36 in Sacramento. The game was pretty much competitive through the first half. And then the third quarter started, the Mavs blew them out of the water. Luka had, I think, 26 points, 7 rebounds and 4 assists at halftime, which is, you know, if you guys didn't know this, that was Luka's 15th 25 plus point first half this year.
Oh my God.
15 times he's done that. Next 3 players combined have 14. So that's all I got to say about that. But what was most impressive for me, obviously, as a Mavs fan, that third quarter, you knew about a couple possessions in that Kyrie was going to take over this game. and Luka let it happen. And I don't know if you guys saw in the post-game press conference where they said, oh, you know, people have said, Luka, you're Superman, Kyrie's Batman. And Luka goes, no, I'm Robin, Kyrie's Batman, which is like the classic, like, I'm trying to stay humble. Like, we get it. Like, bullshit, people, yeah, people are going to run with that one way or another, right? People will be like, oh, he's humble. Be like, oh, this guy, do you think the best player on the team? Whatever. I don't care. I thought it was funny because everyone knows that he's just bullshitting. But at that point,
well, it's also funny that the real Batman's in Charlotte now because Grant Williams left the Mavs.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Grant Williams. Yeah, I'll get to him. But the thing is, I think that's the biggest difference from the Mavs this year from last year is obviously with the Kyrie in the middle of last year, it was kind of weird with the chemistry. You didn't really know how they play together. Luka and Kyrie, when they've been healthy this year, they have been so in sync together offensively, yep, where they will let one cook and the other one will be like, all right, it's your time to shine. They'll play together. They'll play where one, you just know, all right, this is his possession. Sometimes they'll play with each other. It helps Luka, you know, be off the ball sometimes too, which is huge, for especially for a guy with the usage rate that he usually has. He can take, you know, a couple plays off on the offensive side. And I'm not saying off like he's just standing around, but where Kyrie's doing most of the work, right? And not to mention too, they're two of the best like playmaker passers in the NBA. It has helped everyone around the Mavs. Tim Hardaway had a good shooting night, which is, you know, you never really know what you're going to get out of him. But yeah, he had a good shooting night. I think he's had 4 threes, 22 points. But regardless, having Kyrie and Luka's chemistry has been the biggest, I think, improvement from the Mavs last year to this year, which we've really seen, especially in these games where Luka starts going off to the point where the defense is like, we got to put full focus on him. You can't do that anymore when both are healthy. You just can't do that. And you know, I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to get too hyped about the Mavs, but let's be honest, guys. The Mavericks are 11-0 when Luka and Daniel Gafford both start. They got Luka a big man. They got Luka a guy who, like you said, can give them vertical spacing, a guy who can dominate inside the paint, both on the defensive side and the offensive side. They gave Luka, I mean, we're talking about Gafford, but 33 consecutive made field goals during a stretch this year. I mean, he's been the exact guy they need. People want to talk about PJ Washington's offensive stats. Let's talk about his defensive stats because he's locked up everyone, including he locked up Sabonis last night. I mean, they have been such huge additions to this team, and it's made the Mavericks go from, okay, you know, they're kind of a fun team and consistent, to now, as long as Jason Kidd doesn't try to make any of these weird coaching decisions, they have an identity. They had no guarantees on that end. You're right. They have an identity, and right now they're starting five: Luka, Kyrie, Derek Jones Jr., PJ Washington, and Daniel Gafford. That is size. That is size. That is strength, and that is athletic ability. And that's a scary matchup for any team in the West. I can take my Luka MVP talk, but that's going to take me 30 more minutes, and I don't want to discuss it because it's just a rabbit hole. You guys know that. We'll save that for another time. But I just want to bring up that since the trade deadline, everyone's saying Luka can't win. That's why he's not going to be MVP. Since the trade deadline, the Dallas Mavericks are 14-6. Luka's averaging 32, 10, and 10.5 on 48, 40, and I believe 82 shooting splits. He's got a plus minus of 8 per game. You know, do that over a 20-game sample size. That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
The Mavs, last 10 games, 9-1, second in defense, which is the big thing for me, right? PJ Washington and Gafford were brought in more for their defense than their offense. They still can help offensively, and they have, but they were brought in for their defense, and that's what they're doing. So all these guys being like, oh, PJ Washington, terrible trade. He's only averaging like 10 points a game for the Mavs. They don't need him to average 20. They don't need him to shoot the lights out. He's shutting down everyone. He's the only guy who looked to slow down Wemby in the past month. The only one. So it's been a great, you know, it's been a great change from previous years of seeing the bigs on the Mavs to now. And like I said, people are running out of excuses for this Luka can't be the MVP agenda. And I'll be the first to admit Jokic should be the favorite. Jokic should be a favorite, but it's a two-horse race. It's a two-horse race now between Jokic and Luka. I don't want to hear anyone else's name. I'm sorry, Giannis. I don't want to disrespect you like that, but I don't want to hear your name anymore. We're not even going to talk about the guy in the Thunder because that's just blasphemous. Dude's putting up stat lines that Luka has at halftime. I don't need to hear it. Yeah, you got a great young team around you. I don't care. But the fact of the matter is that if the Mavs keep winning and they keep moving up in the Western Conference, because there's a legitimate chance, there is a legitimate chance they would have a four, could get the four, could get the four seed. Legitimate chance. They are, I believe, what, a game and a half behind the Clippers?
A game and a half. That's with Ingram hurt and with the Pelicans in front of them. And then we just talked about it. The Clippers are the only team with the losing record in their last 10 out of the top nine in the West.
A game and a half back. The Mavs are the second hottest team in the NBA, because I still got to give the Rockets credit right now. The second hottest team in the NBA right now. Celtics don't count, Donnie. Don't worry about that. Yeah. They're exempt. They're doing their thing.
Well, and this just,
you don't want to see the Mavs. And you don't want them to get the four. You don't want them to have a home series first run in the playoffs. And I promise you right now. I promise you two things right now. All right, two things, and then I'm done with this little mini Mavs rant. Two things right now. My first promise is if you asked every single Western Conference team, right, outside of the Denver Nuggets, who is the team you least want to see in the playoffs, they're going to say the Dallas Mavericks. And number two, and this is for you, Shaq, and this is for everyone else who has their agenda against Luka. If you asked all 30 NBA GMs, which player would you rather start your franchise as right now, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander or Luka Doncic, not one person's taking this. Not one. It's not close. I don't want to hear this agenda. I don't want to hear these excuses. Oh, they can't win. Oh, they can't do this. Well, now, now he's putting up numbers. Right now, I'm looking at you right now. Nobody in the West wants to see the Mavs, and no one is taking SGA over Luka.
Let's go. I love it, dude. And it makes so much sense, because I was just waiting for this to happen for the Mavericks. The Mavericks aren't an 8 seed. So when they were hovering in that 8-9 for like that 2 weeks, 3 weeks span, whatever it was.
Oh, when Jason Kidd was playing Maxi Kleber over Daniel Gafford.
And you know, whatever it was, and the Suns too. Like I was like one of those teams. It doesn't make sense that they're both there. I still don't really, it's still like hard to look at the West standings and see the Suns as the 8 seed, but it didn't really make sense for either of them. But the Mavs, they climbed their way up. And like you said, they could easily be the four. I think they're going to keep climbing. I don't have them staying at the six. But if the playoffs started today, I would fucking love to see a Minnesota Mavericks first
round. Gentlemen sweep. 5 games. Gentlemen sweeping them. Let them get one at home. I think
it'd be awesome, man. Just Ant versus Luka in general. Obviously, as a fan, regardless of who you're pulling for there, I think you'd want to see Cat back for that matchup. We don't know. But yeah, man, the Mavs, it makes sense that they're climbing. Luka and Kyrie have been fucking so fun to watch. Like, they're showtimey at times, man. Like the way they run the break, you talked about Luka and Kai, both just fantastic playmakers on top of everything else. They're fun to watch. I don't know
if you've seen Kyrie's dunking now. Like, he's putting up some crazy dunks right now. They're having Ramadan, fun playing together. And the biggest thing, I think the biggest thing with Kyrie, right, we all knew his talent on the court, right? And maybe, I'm getting ahead of myself here, but I don't really think I am. I think Kyrie loves it in Dallas. I think the way they treated him, the organization, his relationship with Luka.
Locked in and happy and forever.
Did you see they had like an auction? I think they had, their Mavericks ball. They had an auction, and it was like something for like to would go with Luka, some vacation with Luka. Kyrie was the top bidder for that. Like, they're bidding on each other's things. Like, these guys genuinely love playing with each other, and they're appears to be friends off the court as well. And that is huge for chemistry. You talk about, you got to have chemistry with your stars, right? LeBron and Anthony Davis, they love each other, right? We talk about the Warriors with the Splash Brothers. Dunny, the Jays love each other. Like, I think Kyrie and Luka are getting that this year. And people also forget too. They want to talk about the Mavs, they don't have, they're the sixth seed. They can't win games. Kyrie missed 22 games. He missed 22 games this year, man. We're looking at, and also too, you want to talk about the Mavs pre-deadline. It's a completely different team than they are now. The only thing I care about the Mavs is since the deadline right now. And the facts are the facts. They're 14-6, second in defense, fifth in offense.
Yep. It's a great point. It's a great point.
I'm not living in the past.
We talked about that right at the deadline. Like they made this roster look complete at the deadline. And now Jason Kidd trusts the guys, it seems
finally.
And yeah, they're rolling. If they get to that four seed, it's dangerous. And that we want nothing more for this podcast than the Thunder to get the one seed, the Mavs to get a 4 or 5 seed and get a juicy Thunder Mavericks second round matchup.
The NBA world needs that.
We really do, especially once SGA gets named MVP right after the season.
Stop it. See, I got I'm fine if Jokic wins.
You want to know what I think the agenda is for? We got the Olympics coming up. They need to push that Canadian team. If they can do that in North America.
They don't want Europeans winning the award.
I'm agreeing with you. They're pushing the Canadian. They're pushing the Canadian.
Can't do it, man. I can't.
Steve, you're gonna be in the Western Conference Finals. That's a better outcome than MVP. Would you take a Western Conference finalist or MVP for Luka right now? Hit the button for one.
Western Conference Finals. We're winning. I'd rather
win. No. That's not the button.
I'd rather go to the Western MVP. Conference Finals.
Okay.
But the fact of the matter is like I'm not trying to go too crazy right now, because obviously if they matched up against the Nuggets in the Western Conference Finals, Nuggets would be the overwhelming favorites. It'd be a tough series. But the way they built this team and the way they're playing right now, am I crazy to say that I think this team could win the West?
No.
Is that crazy?
No. But
beat Denver. I know it took a Kyrie miracle shot.
Yeah, it did.
But they were up 13 with 6 minutes to go in the fourth. They blew the lead, and they showed that we're able to still win the game. But I don't think it's crazy to say right now, like, not that I would be disappointed, but I think this team has a legitimate shot to win the West. I really do. The way they've been playing, 11-0 with Luka and Gafford both starting.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's insane.
We'll see, man. Last night was telling. I think that's a big statement game. You laid out their upcoming schedule for us a few days ago.
Play the Kings again. Kings are going to want revenge. That's a scary game.
The two Kings games I knew were going to be the ones to look at, and they proved something in the first one. And, yeah, I mean, the Kings haven't looked nearly as good as the Mavs lately. Let's just say that.
You know who they play after the Kings, Donnie?
Who's that?
The Rockets. Sunday night, Mavs at Rockets. That's going to be a wild game.
All right, Steve, let's end here with a little Sweet 16 preview, and why don't you get us going?
We need the floor from you. Yeah. That was a Steve rant, Mavs rant. Now we need a Steve Sweet 16 rant. Let's combine those words.
So going into the Sweet 16, I first want to make like a little statement about the first two rounds, right? Because I've heard mixed opinions. There's some people who have loved how it's gone. There's some people who hated it, said it's bad. I will say objectively, the first two rounds have been below average compared to previous tournaments, first couple rounds. We've had a couple pretty good games each day, right? But there's been a lot of blowouts. There's been a lot of higher seeds advancing. There was only one underdog that won in the second round for the men's side. The women's side, the first round, only one lower seed advanced. And obviously women's side, you know, that's more expected, right? That the favorites versus the underdogs is going to be. But on the men's side, usually you get crazier upsets. We had the Golkey, you know, Cinderella, I guess, game with Oakland, which was awesome to watch. Shout out Kentucky. I mean, they proved me right every time that, you know, I still pick them, but they proved me right where it's like they don't play defense and they just don't know how to stop
it. Ruined my bracket, bro.
Auburn decided to ruin mine with Yale, the classic. And we said it on the podcast last week, too. Auburn and we go, why are we doubting the Ivy League school? We know they're just going to ruin our bracket. And sure enough, they did. However, I think we're set up for an incredible Sweet 16, possibly Elite Eight. There could be some possible juggernaut, and I mean juggernaut matchup. Starting in the Sweet 16, right, you have UConn, San Diego State. We got a rematch. Yep. I know it's different rosters, but we got a national championship rematch. So you're not telling me right now San Diego State doesn't want that to turn into what it did in the championship, and I know UConn looks unbeatable. But that's a game where I feel like San Diego State's going to play that game like it is the national championship. Yep. And then the other half of that region, you have right now the number one rated offense, Illinois, against the number one rated defense, Iowa State, which it's fantastic. And that's why people who complain, and I'm one of them, don't get me wrong, I love the upsets. I love the Cinderella complain like, oh, too many favorites won, too many blowouts. It sets up, though, for such a good second weekend of the tournament.
Yeah.
And I can't I'm most excited for is these matchups, right? I'm most excited. And I know I only talked about one region. You still have Houston versus Duke, which is crazy. Gonzaga Purdue rematch from earlier in the year. UNC Alabama, that could be first to 200 wins that game.
Yeah.
Arizona against Clemson, who kind of came out of nowhere but looked great in their first two games.
Can I interject with something hilarious about the NBA real quick? Please, breaking news. Draymond Green got ejected with 45 minutes left in the game. It just started.
I mean, no surprise. Literally tipped his guard. No surprise. Warriors are in shambles.
It's Orlando 8, Golden State 6, and he's already been ejected.
What happened? What did this man do?
I didn't see what he did, but I just saw that, and we were just talking about this man and his behavior. And
who knows at this point?
He's not worried about Houston, though. He wants that to be clear.
For arguing with an official.
Oh, all right. There we go.
Well, he didn't hit someone, so that's good.
Yeah, that's good. He didn't choke anyone out.
Continue, but, Steve. You were at UNC Alabama race.
UNC Alabama. Like I said, Arizona Clemson, who's been red hot. Tennessee Creighton could be a great matchup. Gonzaga Purdue rematch. I can't wait. And then, Donnie, I saved it for last because I got to give you credit. Burns and NC State, the only double-digit seed in the Sweet 16 right now. They get to play Marquette, who didn't look great in the first half against Western Kentucky, then kind of pulled away, right? And then Colorado gave them a hell of a game. Probably the second best game, I believe, on Sunday was like a sandwich, right? You had Colorado, Marquette to start, which was a phenomenal game. Great game. Then six terrible games. And then Houston, Texas A&M, which was a phenomenal game. But the problem is a lot of people missed the first game and a lot of people missed the last game sometimes because it's on too late. Yep. And my biggest argument why people think this tournament's been kind of shitty is a lot of blowouts and almost all the great games have been the late night slates. And if you go back and look, they've been in those weird spots. But I mean, I'll tell you right now, Marquette, they looked, beatable in the first two games. And NC State, if you want, it's hard to call a major conference team a Cinderella team, even though they wouldn't have gotten the tournament if they didn't win the ACC. But that 11 seed,
I feel like it's all in the run of why they're a Cinderella. It's
exactly.
Just, if you were following how they got here, if you just watch them, bro, like Golkey versus DJ Burns the other night, and Golkey obviously wasn't shooting as hot as he was in their first game, but
that was still a barn burner, man. Yeah. It was still a great hell of a game.
Yeah.
And Burns is such like a funny like mismatch because I feel like you're like, all right, well, you just need to throw size at him. But if you go 1-on-1, he'll beat you 1-on-1 on the low post. Yeah. He has crazy touch, so he doesn't have to be right on the block to score. And then if you want to throw more bodies at him, Steve, you texted this in the group chat at the end of that game. He can pass out of the double team like he's in the NBA.
Yeah. Not that he can pass. He's a phenomenal passer.
Yeah.
For a guy his size, like his vision, his ability to not get – a lot of guys in college especially, more so college than the NBA, tend to get overwhelmed when a double comes or a trap comes. And that's when you see these games get chaotic with a lot of turnovers. Donnie, I mean, Oakland was throwing 2-3 guys at him, and he was just patient – waiting to find the open guy. It was fantastic.
It's crazy, man.
To answer your original question, everybody loves the upsets and everything else, but we talked about it when we were previewing the bracket last week where there's like 9 elite teams in the country this year. UConn is a step above everybody, but there's really like a higher tier than everybody else, and all those teams are left, and that's what I really am excited about. Is we're gonna get most likely the best four teams in the Final Four, hopefully. I mean, if NC State gets there by beating Duke, beating North Carolina in the ACC title, ACC tournament, and then beating Marquette and maybe Duke again or Houston, then they belong to be in this conversation at this point too. And all the other teams left have a claim to be one of the best teams in the country all year long with the way that they've maybe not a Gonzaga or a San Diego State who didn't
Don't hate on Gonzaga.
I'm not hating. I'm just saying that they had a lower year than the previous year.
Agreed, but the only reason for that is basically because they lost to St. Mary's in the regular season this year. If they win those games, Gonzaga's probably a 1 or 2 seed.
And they play the hardest non-conference schedule every single year, and this is a new team. Like, how much
people want to hate on them?
Yeah,
and also shout out to Gonzaga, I will be 9 straight Sweet 16s. No other college has done that.
That's crazy. Yeah,
More than Duke and UNC, they passed them.
You want to talk about all this team always chokes? It's because they haven't won it all, right? It's the classic until you win it. It's like with the Boston Celtics Tatum team, right? Why does everyone hate on this team? Oh, they fall short. They choke because they haven't won it all yet. Yep. Once you win it all, then everyone looks back and like, wow, look how dominant they've been.
Yeah, look how successful they were
for years. Yeah, and so until Gonzaga wins it all, everyone's going to use the classic argument: oh, they choke, they play.
Isn't that crazy how we can't measure success until we just see it?
I know. Shiny
piece as a Buffalo Bills fan, I hear you guys
completely. Yeah, exactly. And that's the biggest issue with it, because Gonzaga has been one of the best basketball programs through basically our entire life. For us, we've been alive. Gonzaga's been pretty much a dominant basketball program. And so it's nice to see them back there. I think they got a great chance against Purdue.
Oh, I will be hammering the money line in 5.5. Oh,
yeah. I don't want to watch Purdue. And you know what? I don't want
to turn this into an
anti-Purdue. I don't want to turn this into an anti-Purdue. I hate watching them.
Bro, you talk about this tournament hates watching Purdue basketball.
Four guys on the outside. Edie stands in the middle. You pass to him. You wait for the double, or you try to draw a foul, and then you throw it outside to one of the guys to shoot while three other guys crash the glass because the entire other team's got to box out Edie. Yeah. I can't watch that. I can't watch that basketball. They shoot 45 free throws a game. I can't watch that.
The Vols are in my championship game, so obviously I want them to get there, but any of these three teams – That's my favorite game of the weekend or the Thursday Friday is Creighton Tennessee. That's going to be such a great matchup. But any one of these three teams needs to take out Purdue for the country's sake. For the Final Four Saturday.
You guys know it would be poetic, but it would take a super long shot to get there. If we see Purdue win their next two games, NC State wins their next two games, and then DJ Burns gives Edie the business.
Buddy just wants to see Burns as much as possible, man.
I mean, tell me Burns versus Edie wouldn't be just a hilarious visual.
It would be great. The only thing that scares me there, and it's kind of similar to how Utah State got ran out of the gym, their big, great Osabor, who's a fantastic big, he's just used to being bigger than everyone, right?
Yeah.
He was 260, 7 foot tall. He's just always played as the bigger guy. He had no idea how to play as the smaller guy. I don't know if Burns would know how to play as the smaller guy. Yeah.
It'd be tough.
I think that'd be too much firepower at that point. But my only question I want to pose for you guys, out of the 1-4 matchup, so UNC versus Bama and Houston versus Duke, which 4 seed do you have the most confidence in?
Alabama. Yeah. Yeah. UNC can be a little inconsistent, and at Alabama, that is they are inconsistent, but when they're hot and they can score with anyone.
They like to muck up games too. And Duke, I feel like UNC doesn't really favor that.
Duke is super talented, but the biggest thing, my concern with Duke is they've been called a little soft this year, the way they play. They've been soft. You can't do that against a Calvin Sampson Houston team. That is the last thing. A&M gave Houston a war. Why? Because they're just as tough as Houston.
Yep.
I don't know if you guys stayed up to watch the end of that game.
Yep.
When they were in overtime, 3 of Houston's best players fouled out. 3 more had 4 fouls. A&M had 2 of their best players fouled out with 3 more with 4 fouls. It was just a war. And Houston, that's just not Duke style. I think it's a bad matchup for them playing Houston. Alabama, UNC, I like the matchup a lot more. And I think this probably goes in the pace direction that Alabama wants. And we saw against Charleston, right? We saw it against Charleston. We saw it in Bama's second round. When you play like the Grand Canyon Alabama game was disgusting. It was just one of the ugliest games to watch. But when you play the style Alabama wants, you're not going to have a chance because they're so good at it and they're so used to it. You got to make Alabama uncomfortable. I don't think UNC is the team to make Alabama uncomfortable.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said. Bama has the better chance just because if that game's going to be 100-90 no matter what, I feel like, with one of those either teams. It's a horrible matchup for Duke. Duke's such a finesse team to play this Houston. Duke really has to shoot like 55% from three in this game to be.
And Houston. I think Houston's the number one perimeter defense.
Yeah, exactly. Really? It's a terrible matchup. That matchup is a great TV matchup. We're going to get all the old highlights, Houston, Duke, and everything else. Houston, as much as I picked Marquette to make it there and everything else, Houston has the easiest road out of everybody else, out of the one seeds the rest of the way, I think. UConn's toughest test, I think it'll be in the Sweet 16. I think if they get Illinois, they would smash Illinois.
I'd love to see them against Iowa State,
though. I would too, but I still think I think they'd win by 10. I think it'd be an ugly game, but still handle that Iowa State team. UNC and Purdue are definitely wary going into this weekend.
Can I get to my mini rant of the week, guys?
Yeah.
Because it ties into this. Unless, Don, you got anything else to say about Sweet 16?
No, let's hear it.
I'm going to tie the Sweet 16 back to the NBA because classic Mike Greenberg's got to run his mouth. Everyone's got to do this. And it was the classic UConn. Not only did he say UConn could beat an NBA team, and don't get me wrong, UConn's a great team. He said UConn could be a play-in team. First off, Mike Greenberg, they're going 0-82. They're going 0-82, and they're probably a 30-point dog in pretty much every game. They're getting swept in four games by the Detroit Pistons. The Wizards are taking them out in four. Like, they're not beating any NBA team. How do you get to the NBA? I say this with every time. People try to compare the Alabama teams. Oh, they could beat the Cleveland Browns. Stop it. They'd lose the battle of the line of scrimmage.
This is worse, I think.
I think this is much worse because there's fewer guys that play. So there's fewer guys that get to the league that have to dominate. Like, people, like the Wizards, Corey Kispert comes off the bench. He averaged 20 a game for Gonzaga and Cotton. Like, what are we talking about here? Like, this UConn team's great, but appreciate them for being a great college basketball team. They would get absolutely run out of the gym in any NBA game. I mean, it's with professional to college, it's no comparison. So that leads me into the question I want to pose to you guys, because I know you're both sane. I know you're both on the right side where college team doesn't stand a chance against an NBA squad. Mike Greenberg, you're off your rocker, buddy. They're going 0-80.
Chandler Parsons' response to that?
Oh, what he said. No, I didn't.
He said the best player at UConn wouldn't play on the Detroit Pistons right now.
Exactly. That's all you need to say. So I guess my question to you guys, because this is the one I've actually been thinking about. Let's say Stetson Mad Hatters, the 16 seed, right? You can pick any 16. I'll pick the Stetson Mad Hatters because they're actually kind of fun. They got a couple guys on offense. I know they got killed by UConn. Which NBA player do you think you would have to put on Stetson for them to win a championship? And I'm saying not like, oh, Giannis, they win. Yeah, no shit. Like, yeah, we get that. How far down can you go for like maybe the worst NBA player you can put on Stetson where they go to the championship? I'll give you the name I have after you guys give me your names.
Jordan Clarkson.
Ooh, okay. He probably averages 40. Defense is a big concern. Defense is a big concern there, but he probably averages 40. No one's stopping him. And people are going to be like, well, it's one player doesn't make a team. Guys, we're talking about an NBA player on a college basketball team.
Yes.
Jimmer Fredette was dominating in college basketball. That guy is not sniffing the league right now.
With it to win the national championship, or just the national to make a championship. Run?
Yes, let's say Stetson. Any 16 seed, but we'll say Stetson for the example. What guy are you putting on? Clarkson. Only thing that concerns me, Jake, like I said, is defense. There,
I think he's fine. He's 6'5". He'll be able to body up.
He's a big guard. I have my answer. It's a little bit better than Clarkson, slightly. But I don't hate the Clarkson pick though.
I'm trying to think of like a forward that can do both, but like isn't.
You want
to
hear mine, Dunny?
Yeah, let's hear yours.
Jeremy Grant.
Yeah.
Jeremy Grant. He averages like 40, 15, and 10. I mean, no one's stopping him if he drives. He can shoot the three. He's going to lock down anyone.
What about like Taurean Prince? Like a guy who's just a big
I was going to say like DeAndre Hunter.
A little bit. Yeah.
Prince scares me though because I don't think he can handle the ball. I think you got to at least run the offense through them, right? They got to be able. I don't think you have a spot up shooter.
Is Derek White too good of a player? Because
I would say Derek White works.
I think he could easily.
I'd put Derek White over Jeremy Grant probably.
Yes.
So,
first name that came to mind was Peyton Pritchard, but then you said the defense thing, that would be tough. But like the way Pritchard's been playing in the league, like he would bully some college dudes in Oregon, dude. We remember
what he did years ago in Oregon.
That's why he was the first one to come to mind.
What about like Mitchell Robinson? We're just talking a big, like a guy that's just like a rebounder, The only thing that scares me there is ball handling foul trouble.
Mitchell Robinson, ball handling foul trouble scares me. I want the offense to go through him, right? I don't think offense is going through Mitchell Robinson unless you're doing the Purdue strategy, throwing him in the paint.
Well, that's what it would be. Yeah, it'd just be Mitchell Robinson playing like 1970 basketball.
He's just playing Wilt Chamberlain basketball.
That's a good question. Yeah,
that is. I like that. And that is just such a fucking bogus statement by.
Oh, it's outrageous.
Oh, my God, bro.
I mean, it's
it gets me so mad because it happens every time college basketball or football. There's a team that looks great. They're like, oh, they could beat a pro team. I know they're doing it for reactions and clicks.
Jonte Porter to go full circle would be the best player on UConn right now.
No, exactly, dude. No, you're not wrong, though. You're not wrong. Unless he bets his unders in college. But college ruled out the prop. So Jonte's good. Jonte's going to play the whole game. But you're not wrong.
My official answer is Dean Wade.
I love that. Dean Wade would score 50. He'd shoot 25 threes a game, bro. Sam Merrill. Yeah, we want to talk about a guy chucking threes. Sam Hauser would be way too good. Way too good.
no one get a hand in his face, bro.
They'd be the first 16 seed favorite if Sam Hauser was on that team.
100%.
This was fun, guys. I'm glad we did a little bit of everything today. We went over some hot button issues with the gambling. We talked all the fun and all the madness of the Sweet 16. Draymond obviously just got ejected from the game, but injected himself into our podcast.
It was
everything, and it was all brought to you guys by WinStreaks. Go download the free to play WinStreaks app. It's simple, guys. You pick teams to win, accumulate points based on those games, and then win cash prizes weekly. Again, 100% free to play. Make 5 picks per day on the NBA, NFL, NHL, college basketball, and football when that starts back up. MLB starts so soon, and use tomorrow. Our code. Yeah, yeah. Literally so soon. Tomorrow, get your MLB picks in on WinStreaks. Use our code HHH in the referral code spot when you sign up. Thank you to Train Wreck Sports, and thank you guys for listening. We'll see you guys next week.